Thanks for your introduction, and thanks for your invitation for coming here to present to you my recent work with Qiming Chang, Mingxuan Lin, Shuhen Xiao, and also Xi Ying. So I'll be talking about topological line operators and RG flows in two dimensions. Let me start with some brief motivations. So by now, increasing evidence, we've seen that QFTs are not complete without specifying the spectrum of extended objects, non-local operators. These non-local operators, they satisfy some constraints from the local operator spectrum, but also constraints that's due to this relation between defect operators themselves. And knowing information about this defect or extended objects can have very interesting applications. For example, when you suppose you start from an extended TQFT, extended QFT, meaning that you know it's extended objects or defect objects, non-local operators, and suppose the QFT has some relevant RG flow. It's typically very difficult to say precisely what you end up in the IR phase. But if you do have some non-local objects which are preserved under the RG flow, inherited, whose structures you know from the UV data, then you can use the structure of this defect to constrain the possible RG, possible IR phase. So this sounds like something that may not be familiar to you, but as I'll convince you, this is something that actually we do a lot of time. We do many often. For example, a class of defect operators that we deal with in every day are symmetry defects. So whenever you have a Q form, a P form global symmetry, there's a corresponding defect of dimension D minus 1 minus P that's defined by the integral of the dual of the conserved current over this dimensional subspace of your spacetime. D is the dimension of the spacetime manifold. And then the statement. So in the case of the zero form symmetry, it corresponds to a D minus one dimensional domain wall. And if you consider such symmetry defects here and replace the defect objects by symmetry, and replace the defects inherited by preserved symmetry by the relevant deformation, then this picture is nothing but using symmetry to constrain RG flow. In particular, in the case where the symmetry has some is associated with some TOF anomaly, and if that symmetry is preserved, the TOF anomaly will be preserved, and that will tell you the IR phase has to be non-trivial, has to be some non-trivial phase in the IR that saturates the TOF anomaly. Okay, that's a usual argument that people try to use to predict that the IR phase has to be some non-trivial, either critical phase or some non-trivial topological phase that saturates the TOF anomaly for symmetry. But what about beyond symmetry? Clearly, symmetry defects are not the end of the story. There are more general defects, extended defects, than symmetry. Can we use them to study RG flows? But then, before you start get into that, you should have a clear notion of what are the consistency conditions? What are the definition of a defect operator in the quantum field theory? So you need some precise definition and potentially a classification. This is a very difficult question, and this is why I'll confine myself to two dimensions where I have many tools to attack this question. So from now on, I'll focus on two dimensions. So the plan of the talk will be that I'll first outline the properties, defining properties and axioms for line operators in two dimensions. And then I'll illustrate these properties using the examples of the IC model. And afterwards, I'll discuss the possible ways to use this defect to constrain RG flows with the illustration in the classic example of tricritical IC model. And then I'll, in the end, I'll end with a brief summary with open questions. So what about 2D defects? So I'll abbreviate using TDL to denote topological line defects in two dimensions. So by definition, 2D topological defect lines are those of non-local operators that commute with the Virasoro algebras. Okay. As I was saying, the simple example of such objects are the symmetry generators. When you have some global symmetry in your theory, for example, they can be represented as an operator, as an exponential of the integral of the dual of the conserved current. This is nothing but the Noether charge. So the way to generalize this is to first realize that the symmetry operators are linear operators acting on the space of local operators. Sorry, it's a, you think about it, a linear map. These are linear map on the space of local operators that commutes with the Virasoro generators. This tells you immediately that this linear map has to be generated by some non-local object. Otherwise, it would just be identity, because identity is the only local operator that commutes with the Virasoro chargers. But not all, we don't want any arbitrary linear map to be associated with the line operator. We want some additional nice property. So this sounds too arbitrary. So we want to put some consistency conditions. A natural consistency condition one can impose is some general notion of Hilbert space on the defects. So this will allow you to cut and glue the defects, for example. So suppose you have a defect L. We want to assume there's a defect Hilbert space. Okay. And moreover, because we want to cut and glue, we want to be able to define the theory on the general manifold. We want the modular invariance. Okay. This consistent condition in the context of 2D CFT boils down to the following equation. So you write down the characters. So maybe first draw the diagram. Consider the theory on the torus. Consider insertion of this line operator L along the spatial circle. This should be equal to the insertion with the L inserted in the temporal circle. When you write them out in terms of the characters, in terms of the Pennington function, this tells you that the Pennington function with the line inserted should be equal to the Pennington function. The Pennington function of the ball Hilbert space with the line inserted should be equal to the Pennington function over the defect Hilbert space with a dual variable, Q tilde, which is related to this Q by S transform. Tau goes to minus 1 over tau. Okay. So the non-triviality of this constraint comes from the fact that there's a discrete sum over the characters associated with this defect Hilbert space. Okay, so that's a non-trivial constraint. This equation is a non-trivial constraint on the on this line operator, how it acts on the Hilbert space. Okay, so if it's suppose you have a linear map that satisfies this relation, and you rescale that linear map by say square root of 2, is still a well-defined linear map, but it would violate this kind of condition because of the integrality constraint over this trace. Okay?
Left picture?
Yes.
It's like inserting L.
Yes.
But why can't I shrink it? If I shrink it to a point, what happens?
This is wrapping a non-trivial cycle.
I see.
Yes, this is on the torus. Mm-hmm. So let me emphasize again. So the point is that when you expand these exponential functions in terms of characters, the coefficient must be integral. That's the non-trivial constraint coming from this equation. So I can just raise the board. So this kind of constraint looks difficult to attack, but there's an interesting set of solutions given by certain kind of 2D CFTs. These are what's known as 2D rational CFTs with diagonal modular invariants. In these theories, it turns out that this kind of constraint, say diagonal modular invariants with the primaries given by the Kara primaries given by this VI. In this particular kind of 2D CFTs, it is known that this kind of constraint can be solved by the following. So first of all, this L should map this Kara primaries to themselves, because it should commute with the Virasoro algebra. So map the primary to primaries. But in addition, it behaves, the acts on the primaries as follows. Acts on them diagonally with the eigenvalues given by the S matrix associated with a particular theory. Okay, so these are the S matrix that comes out when you transform the characters associated with this RCFTs. The detail of this S is not important in this talk. And from this the form of this coefficient and the Verlinde formula, you arrive at this fusion algebra for this linear maps. Where an index is over the primaries of this theory. In particular, you see that in this kind of theories, the rational CFTs with diagonal margin invariants, there's a one-to-one correspondence between the line operators and chiral primaries. And this particular kind of line operators are known as the Verlinde operators. They satisfy the same fusion algebra as the chiral primaries themselves, with the fusion ring coefficient Nijk determined by the Verlinde formula in terms of the S matrix. So this gives you a large zoo of line operators in two dimension that satisfy this kind of consistent condition, yet they are more general than symmetry lines. So for example, these line operators as linear maps acting on the Hilbert space, on the space of primaries, are in generally not invertible, okay, unlike a symmetry generator. However, there are also many non-Verlinde line operators in 2D CFTs. For example, we have a WZW model associated with group G. You can build Wilson line-like operators using the flat connection from the current. So using this current as a flat connection, and you can have Wilson line operators in this theory. And these are not Verlinde line, in the sense that they do not commute with the full current algebra associated with WZW model. So what are the general property of these lines? Okay. So here I give you a bunch of examples, but what are the general properties of these lines that we want to impose? First of all, because we're talking about topological line operators, as I already said here, we want them to commute with super with the reversible algebras, or equivalently, we want to impose what's known as isotopy invariance. This means that when you have a configuration of this line, for example, something like this, this is a line, a defect in the spacetime, and you have some a bunch of other insertions here and here, and also elsewhere. It should not, the physical observables, say Cauchy functions in the presence of this line, should not depend on the shape of the line, as long as it doesn't cross this defect insertions. Okay, this is isotopy invariance. Moreover, one of the consistent conditions that I want to impose to make this line interesting is the notion of a defect Hilbert space. I emphasize that this defect Hilbert space can be empty, in which case the line can be unbreakable. Okay, so suppose you have some defect Hilbert space. If it's not empty, then you can kind of break the line by inserting a complete set of states on the defect Hilbert in the defect Hilbert space. But if it's empty, then it means the line is unbreakable.
Can't you use the steady state to write a map?
Sorry.
Take the theorem as a circle with the line.
Yes. Yes.
So this is never going to be empty.
Let's see. So you want to take consider a state operator map with a single line.
Yes.
Single line inserted, single defect point on the circle.
That's right.
Yes.
It's hard to imagine that the Hilbert space could be empty, because otherwise correlation functions on a surface where only one line runs in the tube will be
open. I will give you an example. Yeah, I will give you an example. So this happens not in the CFT that we love, but will happen in some DQFTs with non-degenerate vacuum.
Okay.
With non-degenerate vacuum, so it's different. So the state map, operator map is a bit tricky in that case. You don't have a unique vacuum. I also want to just say that there's a notion of simple lines, which are irreducible in the sense that it cannot be written as a direct sum of lines that satisfy this kind of constraint. Okay. So from this kind of constraint, clearly that if you have an L, a map that satisfies this constraint, if you take linear combination of them with positive integer coefficients, will also satisfy this constraint. But I want to denote the set of irreducible lines as simple lines. Not yet. Okay. But to have some interesting configuration of these lines, we need to introduce some additional ingredient, which are junctions, which will allow the line to intersect. In particular, I'll focus on topological junctions, which means that you can move the junctions around without changing the correlation functionals. L1, L2, L3. There's some junction here. And you can equivalently think about this junction as living in the Hilbert space associated with the fusion product of all these three lines. Okay. And you focus on the defect operator in the Hilbert space. So this is in this Hilbert space that has zero dimension. Okay. Hence topological. And also, well, already said here, this crucial notion is the I want to be able to fuse lines. Okay, so suppose I have locally have some lines I should be able to replace them by a sum of their fusion products. Okay, with some coefficients in the front. And because of this notion of locality that I introduced, a notion of defect Cooper space that allow me to cut and glue, this will help us in the following sense. So for example, if you have some kind of a web of this line defects, which is very complicated, so there are some mass of lines inside, some crazy things going on here. By cut and gluing along this disk, I should be able to replace this by simply a junction of this type for a certain junction vector here. Okay. And similarly, so you have, if I have on the torus a defect line inserted here, I should be able to cut the torus along the cycle that's perpendicular to the line. This line is wrapping a cycle, and replace them by a sum over two-point functions of defect operators in the Hilbert space. Okay, so here I'm cutting this line and insert complete set of bases. So each element in the Hilbert space will contribute by this two-point function, and this is what it's telling me. So here I didn't say anything about modular invariance. I'm just looking at this channel. But modular invariance put some additional constraint. For example, if I look at a defect one-point function on the torus of the following type, so color checks. So say these are all different kind of lines with some defect insertion here of dimension, left and right dimension h and h bar. I would demand that under S transformation, it should transform in a very simple way. Picking up a face. Okay. This kind of defining property of the defect lines have some interesting consequences. For example, starting from a four-way junction. Okay, so here is some topological junction that's living in this junction vector space 1, 2, 3, 4. So you can think of as this is in the Hilbert space associated with the fusion product of 1, 2, 3, 4 lines. And these are the dimension 0, 0 guys, hence topological. You can try to use fusion to fuse 1-4 line together or 1-2 line together. If you fuse 1-4 line together, you get a configuration of this form. Okay. You sum over all possible lines that appear here because of the fusion product between 1-4. If you fuse 1-2 together, you get the other channel. Okay. Because this kind of fusion is preserving all the information about your TDF, about your line web of line operators. There's isomorphism between them that's generated by something like a crossing matrix. So in the Bootstrap language is some 6J symbol. This is what we'll refer to as a crossing kernel. Which is an object with six labels, the external labels, but also the channel, the internal labels labeling the channels. Okay. So this numbers capture all the information between this between the crossing of this different S channel and T channel line diagrams. But there's something more you can say. So let me say again, the fact that you are free to either fuse 1-4 or 1-2 is essentially because isotopy, because you can deform how the line is drawn. So you can draw slightly over here and fusing with 4. Isotopy also has an additional constraint on the crossing kernel themselves. And this is known as the Pentagon identity. The way you see it is by starting with this configuration of lines. Say locally you have a configuration of lines like the following. You can start by kind of peeling off this line. Like follows. So you imagine you peel off this line and move on to J3. Okay? And you can do it again. You peel off this line to move on to J4. Okay. But you can also do it differently. You can first peel off the line J3 onto J4. This is just doing a different order. And then peel off this 2 line onto 5. Okay? And you see that you can get from here to here by peeling off the 3 line onto 4. Okay, so this tells you that you can perform crossing in 2 different ways, one by 3 steps of crossing and the other by 2 steps of crossing, and you get the same result. So this is a constraint that tells you that a combination of this, a product of this crossing moves that's determined by this crossing kernel. Is equal to another combination. Okay, I'm neglecting all the contraction on the indices. So this turns out to be a very highly non-trivial constraint on the crossing kernels. Okay? Because this must be true for all external labels, these 5 labels. In particular, it implies that the fusion between these lines, the coefficient of the fusion between these lines are determined by the junction vector space dimension. Okay? Recall that this is the dimension of junction or number of independent junction between the line I, J, and K. Okay? So this has to be a positive integer. So this is determined by this. And because of the notion of this de facto Hilbert space, this has to be a positive integer. So this tells you that the fusion ring of these lines is not some arbitrary ring, but it's a ring that's determined by a ring relation with positive integer coefficients. Okay. Just to give you a flavor of how non-trivial this kind of inter-constraint relations are. So you can try to go backwards. Suppose I give you a ring. Suppose I hand you a ring with positive integer coefficients. I mean, defined by ring relation of positive integer coefficients. One may want to ask, can I find a crossing kernel that's consistent with Pentagon relation? Okay. And the simplest case you can ask is, suppose I have a single line, I have a trivial line, and I have a single non-trivial line, say x. I mean, denoted by x. And suppose the ring is given by the following, where n is a positive integer. Okay. And I want to ask, does there exist a crossing kernel such that the Pentagon relation is satisfied? And surprisingly, or not surprisingly, because of the many constraints, the only possibility is n equal to 0 or 1. Okay? There are no solutions for n bigger than 1. Just give you a flavor of how constrained the system is.
Sorry, if you were to not work with topological defects, but with just conformal ones,
yes,
you would presumably get something more
yes.
exotic in that case.
That's right. So I should have emphasized, thanks for the question, I should have emphasized in the beginning that the reason I get very clean fusion relations is because I focus on topological lines. So the fusing of these lines are non-singular. Otherwise, I have to worry about all the kind of Casimir energy and stuff between the lines. Yes. I'll comment on the non-topological defects in the end. So in the mathematical language, the kind of problem that the mathematicians are interested in study are precisely this type. So given a finite number of generators, simple lines, and some fusion ring, and they want to classify the kind of crossing kernels that's consistent with the Pentagon relation. And it's a very hard problem. It has only been solved in the case where you have two simple lines or three simple lines. Okay? And it's a finite list in this case. In this case, you have five possibilities. Okay? In this case, you have two. And all of these possibilities, this two and this five, are realized in CFTs that we know. I'll mention that in the examples. Okay. So I've now, since I've introduced to you a bunch of properties which may seem abstract, let's look at a very concrete example and see what they are. So I cheated and wrote this before. So let's look at the Ising model case. So this is the CFT in the minimum model sequence M34 of central charge 1/2. This theory is a rational CFT. It has three primaries, Virasoro primaries. The identity of identity operator of dimension 0, 0, the energy operator of dimension 1/2, 1/2, and the spin operator sigma of dimension 1/16, 1/16. So apart from the identity line, which is trivial in this theory, there are two non-trivial lines. One is I will call eta line, the other is n line. The eta line, remember this Ising model has a Z2 global symmetry. The eta line generates the global symmetry, Z2 global symmetry. It acts on the primary as follows. So the energy operator identity, of course, even under Z2, the spin operator is odd. Now the interesting object here is this Valente line, this n line. Okay, this n line acts on identity by giving an extra factor of square root 2. I can energy with minus square root 2. And it annihilates the spinning operator. So this is why I was saying that Valente lines in general are not invertible when acting on the local operators, okay? Because this is zero. The fusion algebra, or the fusion ring, of these lines are very simple. So it's a commutative fusion ring. And this n line squares to a combination of the Z2 generator, Z2 symmetry generator line, and identity. The defect here, because of this theory, really, you know everything, right? So you can also figure out the defect Hilbert space. So on the defect Hilbert, in the defect Hilbert space, it's certainly this line. This it has non-trivial defectible space, so the lines can break. And for example, on the eta line, the spectrum is as follows. And on the n line, the spectrum is as follows. Okay, so there you see some degeneracy. And the fact that I'm using two labels to label all these operators is because this line preserves two copies of Virasoro. So even though it's one-dimensional, I'm keeping use of this two, the two Virasoro algebra to label the representations. Okay, and the solution to the solution to the Pentagon equation, okay, can be characterized by the crossing of these following diagrams. You should think about this diagram as local moves that you can do to a DDL, to a web of line operators. For example, if you have some two n lines that are facing this way, you can replace them by a combination of n lines that are facing the other way, but at the price of attaching additional eta line. And similarly, when you have this kind of configuration, you can use this move to change the configuration, the topology of the configuration. And similarly for this. Okay? And also you can determine the full. So because I was saying that the QFT is not complete unless you specify the defect operator spectrum. Once you know the defect operator spectrum, there's also additional structure constants that you should be able to determine. Right? So originally there are structure constants that are three-point functions of this local operator themselves. But since now I've introduced you this defect operator spectrum, I should also determine all their structure constants. For example, of this type. So there's a three-point function between psi, there's a defect operator in the eta Hilbert space, and this s that lives at the end of n lines. Okay? All the structure constant can be determined by crossing that involve non-trivial line operators. Okay.
You say you need to specify this data. I mean, do you know of any situation where
it's solved?
It is solved.
It is solved. It's determined by the local operator data. Right. So that's something that we don't understand, but we observe is the fact that in all the cases we consider the defect additional structure constant for the defect operators are just determined by the local operator spectrum. But we are not making a general statement about that. It's an observation. It's also the case for the TQFT that I mentioned in the end.
Ask your question.
Yes.
So in this Ising model,
yes.
You implemented the Q operators that has such effect, but can I find another operator?
So this is the apart from the identity line, which is trivial, these are the only two simple lines in this theory.
Yeah,
that satisfies the constraint I erase. You know, the S-duality, sorry, not S-dual. The S-dual has to have this integral property.
But how do you know that it's the only those two operators?
Because in this case, you can solve the problem. You can solve this algebraic equation explicitly, and these are the only solutions.
It's very special because of the model.
That's right, yeah. You only have a finite number of characters, and you
logical defect commutes with the Virasoro generators, just a tensor. But in this particular CFT, the tensor generates all the full Carroll algebra.
Yeah.
Everything is made up of finite dimensions, finite set of Virasoro
yes.
modules. But for any other CFT, it would be very hard.
Yeah. So it will be very difficult. For example, if I hand you a rational CFT. It typically has an infinite number of characters associated with any potential Carroll algebra in the theory. Then it's very difficult to solve this problem precisely. But in this case, we can solve it precisely. I should also say that there's a folding trick that allows you to relate these topological defects to the boundary states of the tensor product of the original theory. And the boundary states there are also classified. So that's another way to solve this problem.
Sorry, this might be referring to what you just said, but like I thought that for rational CFTs, it was somehow known that these defects are classified by just the primaries.
Yeah.
Is that the same? Is that precisely by
that's
the
trick? True.
Is that not true?
For diagonal module invariants.
Not only the ones that perfectly preserve the full, that
yeah.
commute all the Carroll algebra are classified, but topological defects don't
yes.
have to.
Yes.
So
yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good.
So the crucial point here is that the Carroll algebra of the IC model is precisely Virasoro, nothing more. I think that's what Davide was trying to emphasize. Yes.
So you can repeat it for any minimum?
Yes, yes, yes. But for example, if you look at you know, three-state pods, and the chiral algebra, it's bigger than Virasoro, it's W3. So you have to say, oh, do I want to just look at topological defects that commutes with W3, or just look at topological defects that commutes with Virasoro? Okay. Interesting thing about this n line, to give you some more intuition, interesting about this n line is the following. So suppose you have some n line that's extending in one direction in the space-time, and suppose you have a spin operator on one side. You can pull it over to the other side using crossing, and it will become a mu operator that's living at the end of eta line attached to the n line. Okay. This is the usual statement of this Kramers-Wiener duality, order-disorder duality. In that context, sigma corresponds to the order operator, and mu corresponds to the disorder operator. And this n-line is implementing the Z2 Kramers-Wiener duality. Just to make it more complete, when you act on this epsilon, the energy operator will pick up a sign when you put it over. It's just from this crossing. The statement is that the Coriolis function of the sigma and epsilon, also identity, are under this map is isomorphic to the correlators of this mu and epsilon identity. Okay. So this is why n is also called a duality defect. Means that Ising is isomorphic to Ising mod Z2. It turns out that this duality is also implemented by this Z2. Yes.
Does the defect also have a non-trivial action on the Hilbert space of the other defect?
Yes. Yes. So that I didn't discuss. But for example, there's a structure constant of this following type. So I drew here. So you have this mu line. I mean, so this is what you can read this diagram in the reverse. So this mu lives in the defect Hilbert space of eta line. If you read reverse, it tells you how the n line acts on mu. So in this sense, it's mapping this defect operator into a bulk operator. So this is why even though n line acting on local operators is non-invertible, it still induces a duality, right? You could ask, if it's not invertible, how could it be a duality? The statement is that it maps some local operators to non-local operators and vice versa, and in that sense, it becomes a duality.
Okay. Because you can gauge eta and make the guy on the right integral.
Yes, yes. So Davide has a very good point. I should have said that. So when you gauge the eta, essentially this eta line becomes invisible, and then this defect operator will become a local operator that's sigma. Okay. That's a physical way to see how this duality happens. And there's a theorem that you can prove, which is that whenever you have a quantum field, whenever you have a 2D CFT that has a subset of lines which obey the fusion rule as the lines in the Ising model, then the theory is due to its Z2 orbifold. Okay? But I will not have time to prove it here. You can ask me afterwards. So let me now jump to the more interesting points, which are the constraints on RG flows. Okay. So let me emphasize again. So the way I'll constrain RG flow is that the start from a CFT, I use the local operator data of the local operator spectrum to know what the consistent non-local objects are, the topological line operators are, and then I turn on some relevant deformation. I don't know where the relevant deformation will end, but knowing that certain line operators are preserved under relevant deformation will give me extra constraint on what the IR phase could be, and I'll use those constraints to solve for the IR phase. Okay, that's the logic.
How do you know if the line is preserved?
Yeah, so that I'll say now. Thanks. So a line is preserved when the line commutes with the relevant deformation. Say I have a relevant deformation phi. A line will be preserved when it commutes with the line when it commutes with the deformation in the following way. So you look at the state correspond to phi, and when this line operator acting on the state, it should behave as follows. So this is the VEF, or the eigenvalue of the identity under the action of L hat. So this means that you can pull the L hat, you can pull phi over L hat. Okay.
Is it obvious that it's the same? That this state is the same as the state that you can pull phi across the L?
Which statement?
I mean, the statement that, so you have the problem here that L and phi is an intersector of L.
With this particular eigenvalue?
Yeah. Is it true that is it obvious that it's equivalent to the fact that phi can be pulled across L?
So this definitely implies that.
The other way, I mean, the fact you can pull it across implies this.
So let's make sure. So phi here, I'm assuming is a primary.
Yes.
Okay. So what I'm thinking about is that I have a on the cylinder, I have this L line. Okay. I have some phi here on this hyperspace by the state operator mapping, and I want to commute L with phi. And this is identity. I mean, identity is here. Okay, this is a vacuum. So if this is true, then they imply that this is equal to this configuration.
I don't understand.
So,
what do you mean when you draw the circle for phi?
This is the state that corresponds to the yes. So it's a state. Produced by a local insertion phi here, I just replace it by phi here.
Okay.
Right. So, and then moving the L over phi.
Actually, I agree that if you can move L across phi, then
yes.
It's followed, but it's not obvious that the opposite is true.
Maybe it's true. From here to here?
Yes.
Right, you say it's. Right. Yes. It's you're saying counterexamples. Okay, let me for now take it as a definition. Okay, can come back to that in the end. So now I would like to formulate some theorems that I can use to detect non-trivial phases in the IR by relevant deformation by phi. The first theorem will rely on something called the spin selection rule. So let me first introduce that. Suppose you look at the torus parting function with a line inserted along the temporal circle. You can perform some T transformation that will tell you about the spin content of this parting function. And so this is a parting function over the defect hyperspace. But on the other hand, I can do a T transformation. For example, like this. Okay. But on the other hand, you can use crossing to reduce this configuration to something else. So for example, if you do some multiple T transformation, you can use crossing to reduce it to some configuration related to this. And by that, you can put some constraint on these phases. Uh, constrain the spin content. And depends on the number of crossing, number of T transformation you do here. Let me put it. So the T here is just doing one T transformation. Okay. And the constraints on this spin is what I'll call the spin selector rule. So the first theorem that I will present is the following. If there is a spin selector rule, that forbids zero spin in the defect Hilbert space of the line L in the UV in the CFD before you turn on the relevant deformation, and if this line is preserved under RG flow, then there are two possible and L preserved. And there are two possible scenarios in the IR. The first possibility is that in the IR, the defect Hilbert space of the same line is empty, so that any kind of spin selection rule coming from the T transformation will be trivial because it will just be zero. The character will be zero. The parent function over the defect Hilbert space will be zero. And if it's not empty, then because of the spin selection rule, it has to have some non-trivial, non-zero spins. This tells you that the IR phase has to be a CFT satisfying the same spin selection rule. The reason that it has to be a critical theory rather than some massive gap theory is because of the spins, because the spin will be non-zero in this case. Okay? Because by assumption, the spin selection will forbid spin equal to zero. So every spin will be non-zero. The second theorem I'll present is related to the expectation value of the line operator. Suppose you have a line that's preserved by RG flow, okay, like following, and that the expectation value of the line on the UV in the UV vacuum is not a positive integer. Then this will imply. Suppose this is true, and if the IR phase is massive, gapped, then this implies that there must be degenerate vacua, meaning that there must be no kind of spontaneous symmetry breaking. This is easy to see. This is because by Modulian invariance, suppose you have a unique vacua in the IR gapped phase, then this the expectation value of this line by Modulian invariance is related to the so first this is equal to trace of line over the Ball Hilbert space. Because of the unique vacua, they're equal. Otherwise, you have a sum over eigenvalues of this line operator. But by Modulian invariance, this is related to the trace over the defect Hilbert space of identity. The QQ part doesn't appear here because it's gapped phase, so everything is trivial. But this is the positive integer, non-negative integer. Okay. So this is the immediate proof. Okay. So these are two theorems, and let me lastly give you an observation, which is related to what Davide asked in the beginning. It's we observe in the case when IR phase is capped. All defect structure constants, all structure constants between defect operators or, and block operators are determined by the structure of this defect lines. Okay, so you have more constraints and the potential variables, but there's a consistent solution in all the examples we studied. And the question, well, let me postpone the question to the end. Okay. So this general study of RG flows and constraints from these lines. So let me now look at the particular examples. Let's see these theorems and the structures of this line operators in real time. This will get, the example will be the next non-trivial minimum model, the tricritical Ising model. So it's in the minimum model sequence, it's labeled by N45. It has center charge 7/10. It has six primaries. Labeled by this. We have dimension, these are all diagonal modular, so this theory has a diagonal modular invariant, so the left and right dimension of this operator will be the same. I'll just write down their dimension on one side. Okay. So these are analogous to the sigma in the Ising model, the spin operators, and these are analogous to the energy operators. This theory, corresponding to this theory, has 10 simple lines. There's eta, denoted by eta and w, and a bunch of others, and n line and a bunch of others. The way that they act on the primaries is the follow, as follows. So the eta line, this is again a Z2 symmetry generator in the tricritical Ising model, and it acts on this operators by giving by acting on this energy operator identity trivially, by giving a value 1. At acting on the sigma operators with the sign. We reverse the sign of the spinning operators. And similarly for this W line, now there's some more complicated phases, more complicated eigenvalues. Where this C is the is related to the golden ratio. And similarly for the n line, which is similar to the one you see in the Ising model. And as we'll see, it's not a coincidence. Okay. This theory has a couple interesting RG flows. So the relevant operators in this game, as you can see, are this energy operators, epsilon prime and sigma prime and sigma. Let's look at the relevant flow given by epsilon and sigma prime. Okay. What's nice about this RG flows is that a subset, non-trivial subset of the TBLs will be preserved. There's two non-trivial subsets. The one is generated by this W line, which satisfies the fusion rule W squared equal to 1 plus W. And another set is generated by this N line, the eta line. This I didn't have time to introduce, but this is also known as the Li-Yang fusion category. It corresponds to the lines in the Li-Yang CFT, which is non-unitary, has two primaries, which are this non-trivial primary W and identity. And this, as you may remember, this is the same as the fusion ring of the line operators in the Ising model. And the statement is that this is preserved under the epsilon deformation. And this is preserved under the sigma prime deformation. Okay? And we can use the fact that this line operators are preserved under this deformation to constrain IR phase. Do I have 5 minutes? Okay. Maybe I should not erase this. So how do I apply the theorems? As you see, the theorem one applies when there's a non-trivial spin selection. Okay, so what are the spin selection here? So just from the algebra of lines, you can derive the following spin selection rule, which says that on the W line, defect Hilbert space, the spins are constrained to be integer shifted by this, either 0 or 2 over 5. So in particular, it contains spin 0, so it doesn't do much with this theorem 1. But for the N line, the spin constraint is more interesting. It takes the form of z over 2 shifted by 1 over 16. Okay, so in particular, it doesn't contain 0. So the spin selection rule would apply. So theorem 1 would apply in particular. So you have two scenarios. Either it will be empty, and it will be a gapped phase, or it will be non-empty. And it will be non-empty, then it will be a CFT. And so we'll see that CFT will be IC model. That's naturally because that's the only endpoint you can flow to that's non-trivial from this tricritical IC model. Okay, but to apply theorem two, you should be looking at the expectation value of this W N line. The expectation value of W line is given by this C. Okay, the way you get this expectation value is essentially by solving this polynomial equation. The expectation value will obey the same polynomial equation as the lines. And this is non-integral, so theorem two would apply. And similarly, the expectation value of n is determined by this fusion ring to be square root of 2. Okay? So we see that theorem two apply to both cases, both flows, and theorem one will only apply to this particular flow. And that's indeed what we expect in this flow, because sigma prime, we're discussing now. This is indeed expected because in this case, because sigma prime is charged under, because epsilon is not charged under Z2, so the sign of this flow is important. And it turns out that depending on the sign, you either get the IC model or you get the gapped phase. And in this case, because sigma prime is charged under the Z2 global symmetry of the UV theory, so the sign of the deformation doesn't matter. So you expect to end up with one phase. Depending on the sign. And this is precisely what we see from analyzing the topological defects, the constraint from the topological defects. And moreover, by analyzing the topological defects, for example, let me just show you a quick example. So in this case, because the expectation value of this W is square root 2 plus 1 over 2, the only way to get to be consistent with modular invariance, which tells you that the trace of this W of the Bauer Hilbert space have to be a positive integer, is to have even number of these guys with expectation with eigenvalue. So first of all, the expectation value of this is this, but there's two choices of eigenvalues because of this quadratic equation. So the only way to get this is when you have paired up eigenvalues like this. When W acts on the Bauer Hilbert space. And this predicts for you that in this phase, the bulk vacuum has to be doubly degenerate. There's some similar game you can play here for the massive phase, which shows that the IR phase has to be at least triply degenerate. And all these results can be confirmed by truncated conformal space approach. Okay, it's a numerical method that shows you that it has to obey the same constraint. And I should also say that in all these cases, when the phase is massive, So in the massless phase, it's just going to be Ising model. That's also consistent with the integrable deformation, because this deformation are integrable, and this is consistent with the TPA analysis for the center charge. And in the massive phase, where in this case you get IR theory, IR massive phase with three vacua and IR massive phase with two vacua, we can solve the TQFT structure constant explicitly, just from the constraint of the line operators.
The one you're never controlled.
Sorry?
In the left one, you're never controlled.
Yes, it's always massive. Yes. OK. All right, since I'm out of time, let me just briefly summarize. Okay. So in this talk, I've shown to you that there's an interesting set of defect operators in two dimensions known as topological line defects that are based on very rigid structure that's constrained by the local operator spectrum and also by a fusion relation between themselves. And you can use this structure of these TDLs, if they're preserved under RG flow, to constrain the potential IR phases. And I show you a bunch of examples. Some interesting future directions to kind of systematically study the constraint from these line operators. For example, formulate some notion of invariant associated with this so-called fusion category of these lines that's preserved on RG flow, analogous to Toff anomaly, that you can compute in the UV precisely and predict for you the IR phase will look like very specific form. Okay. And in relation to this is some kind of TQFT that's protected by these line operators. And of course, we also want to, I mean, because we're interested in defect operators, we want to go beyond just topological defect line operators, as pointed out before. And also be interesting to study kind of, there are many integrable massive deformation. There are many integrable flows associated with the minimum models. It'll be interesting to study to follow how these lines become in the integrable massive deformed phase. And there's also, interesting work by Davide on RG domain walls in these minimum models. In that context, the domain wall between different theories. Here I'm only talking about defects within the same theory, but potentially there's a higher categorical framework that would put them together that allow you to put more constraint on the defect operators that in the theory is connected to RG flows. Okay, I'll stop there.
I think there is a non-unitary deformation that flows to that, so Lilian.
Say it again?
I think there could be a non-unitary deformation of the pericalizing which flows to Lilian.
There could be. There could be, yes.
Maybe you put sigma prime to be, if you add I sigma prime to that.
Right. I haven't thought about it, but you say there is a non-unitary.
No, I'm wondering.
There could be, yes. Yes, but I haven't looked at that. So you want to imagine something like with the I here?
Yes.
Yes. Right. Yes. So in that case, we'll actually flow to yes. So I should say that there is a potential of flowing to a critical but non-unitary phase. I guess that's what you're saying, right? With a non-unitary deformation here. Right. I should say that in the paper, we also consider many other kind of TQFTs that realize all kinds of fusion categories, but I don't have time to describe here. You will come to ask me afterwards.
Thank you, speaker.